optimization and reduction steps. So these are part of the algebraic ones. So a nice thing about the invariance method is that you don't have to worry too much about minimization and reduction. You have to worry about deciding when two coordinates you obtain are equivalent, but that's not too difficult. So here you have to do minimize and reduce, and actually before that you actually have to get models. So to get models, you have to parameterize conics. This is not quite what we heard yesterday, so Denis told us how to find a point on a conic. If you have a point on a conic, you can obviously parameterize it. However, that might not be the best idea. You might want to get a nice parameterization of a conic, and a simple adaptation of this idea allows you to parameterize conics nicely. So you can get a model, and then you can minimize and reduce it. So at the end of the day, you get y squared equals a quartic. And I'll denote this by h. So that's a very brief overview of two descent. So for descent, I'll just point out some things here. So it's called for descent, put it in quotes, because really what people do is they don't do a full-blown for descent, they do a two descent of a given two cover. So it's really a two descent of a stick some names here. The Merriman's Sex Smart paper, and there's Tom Womack's dissertation. And since you're taking a hyperelliptic curve and doing a descent on it, you can probably stick Stoll's name here also. Okay, so here, well, we don't really have an invariant method that's at all practical as far as I know. Kriemann says the invariant method is exponential and just happens to work for two descent for many curves with small coefficients, but in general, you've heard in this conference, do higher descents, you almost have to start looking at algebraic methods. So here, the thing to look at, so there you have KS2, this is coming from, you write y squared equals a cubic, and that's where you get your algebra K from. Here, I'll call it L. And we're going to look at so here the bad primes will be the primes that divide the leading coefficient of the quartic. This is ax to the fourth plus bx cubed, etc. The discriminants, you can probably get rid of primes that divide the discriminant only once or something like that, but I'll just leave them in there for now. Of course, the prime 2 can be bad. And here you'll be dealing with something like k star mod squares. Well, here you'll be dealing with something more like l star mod q star l star squared. So the slight variation here that you get to mod out by these rationals also, but this gives you something where if you find the things that are locally soluble, they will correspond to the two-somer group of our hyperelliptic curve, H. Okay, and again, let me mention what you get when you do the minimization and reduction steps here. So here, the model you ended up with was y squared equals a quartic. So here you're going to get the intersection quadrics 3, so this is 2 symmetric 4x4 matrices. And to do the minimization and reduction, minimization is always kind of difficult to explain. You just have to work one prime at a time. So here with the reduction, so you have a pencil defined by these two matrices, and for the reduction step, first you do a pencil.
Mark your block is vanishing. It's vanishing this four.
Okay. Pencil LOL. And so here, well, you have these two things that are, you start with two given things that generate the pencil, and you want to find nicer representatives. So basically you just flatten these into 16 or 10 things, actually, because they're symmetric, and you just LLL those. And then apply indefinite LL to one or both of the 4x4 matrices. And this is a first step, so you just do this pencil LL, and then you try to make things even smaller. But the actual rigorous definition of reduced here involves a covariance introduced by Stoll. So then, finally, there's a covariant based reduction. And usually in practice, you do this, then you do this, then you do this, and then you do this, and then you do this, then you do this, and once you've done about two or three steps, even if you start with absolutely enormous things at the beginning, it will be done as small as possible, just two or three steps. Okay, and then, so here you can do some sort of point searching just through sieve methods, but here you're going to have to do point searching with these lattice-based methods that I'll talk about yesterday.
I have a question.
Yes.
Usually you do minimization before reduction.
Yes.
Can you say anything about minimization?
So I can say how things relate back to the two descent case, but so here you have these two symmetric 4x4 matrices, say A and B. If we introduce a variable X, this determinant will give us a quartic that's equivalent to the quartic that we started with, but it might and the process of minimizing these two symmetric, the intersection of quadrics formed by these is very similar to the process of minimizing the quartic that we would have here. So remember that Krumlin said it was very interesting to him that the minimization before descent seemed to exactly imitate the minimization for two descent. Of course, Tom Fisher tells me that I don't minimize with the prime two completely correctly. He is some better definition, but in general, you can do it so that essentially it's equivalent in some sense to just minimizing the quartic given by this, and you can break it down one step at a time for that. You have to look at what size the kernel of these matrices are, mod p, etc. But
and do you know what the bad primes are?
Yes, so the bad primes are going to be the primes dividing to A or the discriminant.
Exactly as the bad primes.
Sometimes there are examples where I naively thought that these will always be all the bad ones. After doing 50,000 of these, I found an example where it's at something like 7 and 11 was also bad. So it seems that very rare for there to be other primes at which the model you get is not minimal. But that's it. I thought that it never would occur, and then it did. So.
Would it be nice examples?
What?
Have you looked at these examples in more detail to see where it comes from?
No. I think I just, I had to finish it in Magma and said, okay, well, I can fix it quickly enough. But I didn't have any time to think about how to look at it. I think I stood up the email that I sent to Cremona and said, yeah, well, I thought that might happen sometimes. Okay, so then as I say, this has been tested a lot, at least for some classes of curves in Magnus, so describe what sort of testing I did on this.
Well, maybe it comes from tutorials in the class group. So you may have to sort of, if you compute these LS2 things here, if you have tutorials in the class group, then you get stuff in there that comes from tutorials in the class group, and this may involve some other primes, maybe. I guess small primes, because usually you have small norm generators, but that's...
Yeah, I can
set you
examples.
You get it in the norm of, when you have other, these primes into the norm of the elements, I think that the norm sort of shows up there.
So, one useful place where there's lots of elliptic curves that I happen to know about was a database that William Steinman and I made. So we had over 2 million rank 2 elliptic curves of prime conductor.
So you mean analytic rank 2 for starters? Or?
Yeah. Analytic rank 2 curves of prime conductor less than 10 to the 10. So prime conductor is somewhat nice. You don't have to worry about things like torsion and other such things. So I asked Cremona, okay, so can't you find generators on all of these? And this was in Paris, and he ran MW rank for a while on these. And so MW rank did very well. So he put some limit on it, and the search space was too big for about 2,000 of these. So just doing the invariant method. So this is just the 2 descent level. And for these other 2,471, I just went back and did them with the algebraic method. And I'll coalesce the numbers into following data. So of these 2.1 million curves, 18,000 of them had 2 SOMA rank 4 or 6. And the only 1 or 0 generators, the number of such curves here was 8,000. And here, I don't know exactly what height he looked up to, probably 50 or 60. So out of 2.1 million curves, MW rank was able to completely determine the rank for all but about 26,000 of these. So as I say, I already took these 2,000, and here you can either use Magma's 2 descent command, or Denis has something that works with Pari here. You can use Magma. Oh, there's a okay, so, well, these are our targets then for 4 descent. So for these, we want to prove that the, so here we want to do the second descent, and we want to show that the rank is actually 2. So here we're going to have to do about 55,000 of these 4 descents, all of which, we have to do 3 for each of these. We have 3 of the quartics. And so this did 3 times this many second descent, call it. And at this point, we still have 19 curves with Forshaw not equaling the 2 torsion. So these are the 19 cases out of the 18,000 where we did the 4 descent and we didn't kill off everything. So here we actually have 4 coverings. We certainly, these as I say, these things are rank 2. We have 2 generators on them all. So I should say that we only have 3 things here because you can mod out by what the generators are. So you can only need to look at 3 of them. And so these 19 curves, well, you're going to need something else, 8 descent or 3 descent or one of these other things, and you should be able to show them that the rank is 2 via some method like that. So this seems like a lot of descents. I ran when I was in Sydney. They don't have the fastest computers there, and it took about a week. So these things take about 10 seconds for each one. All the time here goes into computing the class group,
essentially,
because you don't have to do the minimization and reduction steps. These you show that there are no descendants in this case. I say on a fast computer, this is probably more like 2 or 3 seconds. Okay, so then what about these? So this is the other thing where we have to do point searching. We have to do all the model reduction and everything else. So here, this might still be running. We still have 35 curves with a generator of height bigger than 225. So to search up to height 225 takes about a day using these lattice-based methods on a fast computer. So if you stretch this up to 250, you'd eliminate maybe 8 more of these. The worst one has height like 670-something. So here you're going to need perhaps to do an 8 descent or something to be able to find this. But
you could perhaps, I could imagine that you can do a 3 descent and a 4 descent and then construct 12 coverings.
Yes, this is something that Elke suggested once also, and someone gave him they were taking some twist of the Fermat curve, and he said, well, you shouldn't do this by 4 descent. You should obviously combine it with a 3 descent, because it's a natural
3 descent. Yeah, I've seen this email, and it was quite well, might be worthwhile trying this here.
So for those, do you find one generator, but you don't find the other one?
So we have one generator for these, and we just because, well, when I say a generator, of course, I'm assuming the BSD conjecture here. I'm assuming that SHA is one. Mm-hmm. So you know almost exactly what the height of the other generator is. Mm-hmm. Still doesn't help you much in funding.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Trust you. Talk about the amount of work you have to expect to put in.
Yeah, it tells you how long you have to search. But as I say, the factor of 8 going from here to here is not a perfect factor. Okay, so an example of the kind of difficulties that you can easily find yourself if you just do this naively. So here, the rather innocuous looking elliptic curve. So if you, I think this was one of the ones that Cremona didn't use the invariant method on for some reason, or maybe it was one that I just redid when I was doing these second descents. But if you use the algebraic method on this, so this minimization and reduction of conics, I think was mentioned by Denis yesterday, the things will, you can get conics with very large coefficients, so conics obtained as coefficients let's see, here I think it's 20,000 digits. And the reason why is because the fundamental unit of the cubic, of the corresponding cubic field is so large. And essentially, the size of the coefficients of the conic are, they're some small multiple of the number of digits in the fundamental unit. And this, causes a large amount of a big number of arithmetic when you're doing the minimization and then the reduction steps. But at the end of the day, you find this as your fourth. So somehow I'm going from two things that I can fit on half a line here, we had to go through a very large number of arithmetic. However, this is now implemented in a way that this is just not a time-consuming step at all. All the time consumption still goes into computing the class group, and maybe the unit group in this case.
Well,
yes?
The thing is, the numbers you get there are probably S units, which in product representation can still be quite concisely
taken
down.
So this is something that has been suggested to me by Elkies, that, you know, do you really have to write these out in this form? Can you go straight from the compact representation to this of cortic? And I,
In fact, in Magma, as long as you don't add and subtract things, will stay in product representation.
If you do the reduction thing, you will have to.
So I tried to explain this to Elkies, and then I convinced him that this wasn't the time-consuming step, and then he kind of dropped it. He says, well, the classic group is still more time-consuming than normal. Okay, so, and for one for here, so you can start with each. Here again, you get a ridiculously large fundamental unit for this quartic number field. Here I think that the QI has 150,000 digits. So again, you know, you're doing some sort of LLL on matrices with 150,000 digits, but as long as you have good, you know, large number arithmetic to do this in the right way, doesn't take, no, it might take 5 seconds or something, and with the class group taking around that time, it's not really a big deal.
What is QI?
Quadric intersection.
Well, I guess, I mean, if you really have very large things, you could just look at the first, I don't know, 10 digits.
So this is the standard thing to do. It's called the half GCD thing from Schoenhagen. You just look at the top 75,000 digits and LLL reduce those. But how do you LLL reduce those? You look at the top 37,500 digits, et cetera. And this works very well in practice, and it's one of the last things that I did before the Magma release. So, and again, going through this rather surreal process of dealing with these huge numbers, you get things that, unfortunately, I couldn't get them all to be single digits. But there's your quadric intersection for this. Okay, so some other things that I want to discuss here are local solubility, and something that goes with it is torsion maneuver. I think that Sebastian asked me to mention this. So this local solubility step, in various, some people say that, I think the first article by Merriman, Sisek, and Smart, they said, okay, so first you actually get the models, and then you try to determine whether or not the models are locally soluble. And as time went on, this became apparent that a better idea was to try to determine the local solubility just by working in algebra in the Selmer group. And so, so here the idea, let me describe what goes on to descent, I guess. First, so you have this U map. So K star mod squares. And out of prime T. Maps over here. And the idea is that you can compute what the size of the image is going to be here. So you just want to find some things that are actually in the image here. So one way to do this is to find generators for this group, and then apply the mu map at p to them, and this will get you the generators over here, and then you can throw out the things in the Selmer group that do not have a different local image here. So you want to find all images here, and the size of the image here depends upon how many linear factors the cubic has modulo p. Essentially, it's 1 plus or 1 minus the number of linear factors. So the cubic splits completely, then you would have 4 integers here. Of course, p is not 2. Okay, so to compute this, well, you can, you want to find generators here. You can compute generators for this. And when you compute, this was pointed out to me by Niels, I think, that you just compute the generators for these, you apply all the new maps to them, and you get all the images in that way. So to do this for local solubility, you want to take p bad prime. So that's how the two descent works. That you can look at all the local images, you can compute for each prime what the images should be, and you can get rid of the things in your somewhere group that don't map to one of the images that you know, the images that are picked. Okay, so what's different over in the 4 descent? So what am I calling this? I'm calling this H. Similar diagram. See, here you map like this. So here, I mean, you can mod out by 2 and everything again. Here, the problem is that it's more difficult to compute the generators of this. Obviously, you're going to want to take, say, the Jacobian, the hyperelliptic curve, rather than itself, so you have a nice description of the group law. And the idea is that over QP, you know that, so between the hyperelliptic curve over Q and E over Q, well, you know that these things are isomorphic over Q bar. If this is not locally soluble, then there's no solution, then there's no isomorphism over Q. But over QP, you actually know that there is going to be a local solution here. So we know that this is true. So we can just find a solution to H over QP, since H is everywhere locally soluble, and then we just write down this isomorphism. So what we do is we write down generators for E QP mod to E QP and map them back to H. Say H of QP mod 2, if you want to think of it that way, on the Jacobian. Then we again apply the mu of P map and we get the local images here. So there's just one more step of difficulty in that we actually have to write down this isomorphism explicitly, which is painful in Magma because Magma doesn't deal with elliptic curves over non-exact rings very easily. But of course, Castles gives in his book the recipe for writing down if you have a point on a hyperelliptic curve or even a quadratic intersection, we're writing down the isomorphism to an elliptic curve. So I just do this explicitly, and you compute these generators as before. So this is some two group. You just keep on dividing by 2 until you get the generators, and you map them to this isomorphism, and then you again use the mu map corresponding to 4 descent to get the local images.
I have a question for that.
Yes.
For rational points, mm-hmm. you expect that they get smaller the higher you descend.
Yes.
So what about local points? Is it so? I think that it's helpful, but are they? Don't you expect that they are nicer on your H and easier to find than on the elliptic curve?
Here.
But so,
yeah.
So I mean, you're asking how to find the points here to so that you can write down the size.
No. Yuri, I'm asking for the experience.
Oh.
Did you Did you what's the experience that the points are that it's easier to find local points on the elliptic curve or easier on the two descendant?
Isn't it just Hensel's lemma?
I think it's exactly the same. I mean,
you just find the points mod P.
Yeah, basically you just want to solve y squared equals a quartic mod P. So you try random x values until you get a square.
Mod P and the points and then are the same size.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, but now you're asking. There's a question there in that if P divides the discriminant to a very high power, say, you know, 5 to the 30th power divides the discriminant,
mm-hmm.
well, then you have to worry about how much p-adic precision you need here, and it's a different amount of p-adic precision here, possibly, because the quartic might have a different power, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But just finding the points
okay,
is,
no, yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah,
it's not
a
problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I should point out that the same thing that's used for local solubility, so for the curves that I dealt with here, as I said, none of them had any torsion. In general, you can have curves with two torsion, and two torsion is often problematic for two descent because you're modding out by two. And so you can get rid of the two torsion in the two descent rather easily because you know what the torsion points on E of Q are, and you can just follow through where they get mapped to and all these things and just mod out by their images in the Selmer group very easily. This is not quite so easy when you're starting off at the hyperelliptic curve, and well, you're not quite sure where they ended up when you, since you don't have an explicit isomorphism from E to H, well, you can't write down over Q in an easy way what happened to the images of the two torsion points. So for torsion removal, I use something that I found in Jarvi and Smart's paper in the ANTS 3 proceedings on 3 descent. And you just use good primes. P, with this same picture here, you know that if you have a torsion point that it's essentially, if you have a two torsion point, you can tell at which times it has to be sent to the same place or a different place than the identity element. And you can just try enough of these good primes and hopefully isolate what the possible images of torsion are. And in practice, this works. I think Dejavi and Smart say something similar. We try this in practice using all these auxiliary primes, and we have no proof that it works, but it seems to be a good idea. So I think that's all I want to say about descent. So the rest I'll talk about Heitner points until I get to descent and Heitner points.
Michel proved it would work. He was talking about the Jabri Smart thing about using the good primes, and then in our paper you proved that it would work.
Well, but in this case,
yeah, it will work with the P descent. Yeah, it's not clear here, I guess.
But I mean, here you know what the image is. I think that was the problem that they had. They didn't know what the image of the H1 is in this algebra thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did. But I mean, if you want to divide out, kind of remove the identify the things that you get from torsion, that's a different question, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So. Especially when you have, say, 16, where you have Z8 cross Z2 on the original curve. I've actually done examples with that. So there's this guy who keeps this page of records for the highest rank elliptic curves with certain torsion groups, some Dugella, I think his name. And he had one of Z8 mod Z8 cross Z2 torsion, rank 3, but he only had two generators. He just had some parity argument that had to be a third. I found the other one, there was something like 128 of these 4 descendants or whatever, and I modded out by torsion and found something of height 175. So I can't say that I tested things where there's torsion as much as I have on these curves, so it wouldn't surprise me if there's still problems with torsion removal in some cases. Should I try to use the boards in the back, or...
You could use that. I mean, you probably want a whole
board.
Yeah,
well, I like being over here where you can hear the echo, personally.
Oh.
Okay, so Heitner points. I should say that Henri Cohen has a book coming out, and there's a section on computing with Heitner points, largely due to Christophe Delaunay has in it. Has some more of the theory and some computations in it. And I gave a talk about this at the Institut Henri Poincaré in December last year. So I say the web thing that I gave before, that's basically notes from that talk. Okay, so I'll give a very condensed description on how HagerPoint things work. Okay, so we have, I call it the Wiles map or something, some X not N. So this is the upper half plane, cusps added, modded out by gamma not N. So if you integrate from a point Z in the upper half plane to I infinity of the form associated with an elliptic curve, this gives you like a C modulo lattice. And then there's the elliptic exponential, which is the inverse of the elliptic logarithm. I guess it's a more typical thing to know. And this gives you a map to E. That's the way that I'll write it. Okay, so we'll assume that this is rank one, and we'll assume that it's a rational elliptic curve. Otherwise, we don't have Wiles' theorem sufficient generality, I don't think. Okay, so let's let D be a, we'll assume that it's a fundamental discriminant. It will be negative. Have D the square mod 4n. And we need another condition, which will become apparent when I write down the statement of the Grozagier theorem, with the L function of the dth quadratic twist of E, the quadratic twist of E at 1, being the L value being non-zero, so the analytic rank is 0. Just from this condition, just from these conditions, you can calculate that the sign of the functional equation is plus 1, so you know that it has an even analytic rank, and I'm just saying, okay, so choose some twist where it doesn't vanish. The existence of this twist was of such a twist was actually a thorn in Kolobogin's side, but since analytic number theorists have pointed out that, well, yeah, I mean, you do, such things do exist. Okay, so let's consider the set of Hagner points. I won't try to motivate exactly what this is. Why you would do such a thing, but be a set of representatives of the class group K. So K will be this imaginary quadratic field. So here B naught is fixed. So B is a fixed square root of D modulo 4n. And so these are called Hagner points. They have the property that we look at the discriminant of them and n times the discriminant of them, that they're equal. I guess you want these things all to be coprime also. Some technical condition like that. But anyway, the idea is that we have Shimura's complex multiplication.
Is that supposed to be a triple of integers that represents a binary quadratic form?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a binary quadratic form. So this will have discriminant D. So Shimura's complex multiplication theorem tells us what happens when we apply this phi map to these points in the upper half plane. So that we can obviously identify a binary quadratic form with a point in the upper half plane. And this tells us that phi, that gives us something whose coordinates lie in the Hilbert class field. Okay. So these things all lie in the Hilbert class field. It's not too easy to recognize points in the Hilbert class field. It's not too easy to figure out what the Hilbert class field is necessarily. Fortunately, when we fix the B naughts, B naught, all of these things will be conjugate. So it seems.
You should write E of the Hilbert cross field, not just in the Hilbert. Phi of that is a point on the curve, not an element of a number field.
So you want me to write?
Just in E of the Hilbert cross field.
Okay, yeah.
It's confusing.
Excellent. Fixing B naught makes these all be conjugate. And I should point out that Christophe Delaunay has an idea where you don't fix the B-naught, you just figure out what the action of the Akin-Lehner involutions are. So to get from one square root to another, you apply an Akin-Lehner involution. And you can write down things. The goal for practical purposes is to minimize the A's. And via his work, you can do this in a very efficient manner. But anyway. Just for the theoretical purposes, you can just fix the B naught and get all these things that are conjugate. So you obviously take trace them and get something back in the imaginary quadratic field. So the trace gives a point on K. And since we assume that it's rank one, you can look at the WN Akin-Lehner involution, looking at that, you get that it's actually in Q. It's odd sign. In general, you could do this with a rank 0 elliptic curve and get rank 1 twists rather than having a rank 1 elliptic curve and rank 0 twists. And then, well, you have to. When you get something imaginary quadratic field, it will be on the twist and not on the curve. So how does this help us at all? I could have written down a point on the rationals on this curve, just the point infinity. So why is this interesting? It's interesting because of the Gros-Zagier theorem, which tells us what the height of this point is. So let me call the point P. It tells you that the height of the point is L prime. Here comes the other L value, which is why we made it non-zero. 4 times the volume of the fundamental parallelogram times the square root of D. And maybe I'll add Hayashi's name and say the rest of it is conjectural. So what I didn't say is that you should make D be relatively prime to N, and don't make D be -3 or -4. Because otherwise, these fudge factors are conjectural and perhaps proved in a few cases. But you need to multiply by 2 times the number of prime divisors of the GCD, and you need to take the number of units, divide it by 2, and square it. So this is 1 except for the 2 imaginary quadratic fields with more than 2 units. And this gives you the height of this point that you construct in this manner.
What about the Manning constant? Shouldn't the square of that be in
the
denominator?
Yeah, the Manning constant probably appears here also.
Because in the it squares in the denominator. So, yeah.
I think that I officially assume this every time I talk about it, because it's always going to be this annoyance. Yeah. So.
Are you assuming your curve is optimal also?
No. I'm assuming a different conjecture that I think you and I made that. The only times the Monte constant is not 1 is you always have rank 0. So, anyways, so then what the idea here is, okay, so we get this point back, but we can note that P equals LG plus T for some generator G in torsion point T. And we can compute what this index L is ahead of time. Can compute L via substituting for L prime with the BSD conjecture. So I should say that my goals are not the same as Williams, probably, in that my goal is to get a point on a rank 1 elliptic curve. You give me the curve that you think it has rank 1, and I'll find a point on it, probably even a generator. So I'm allowed to assume any hypothesis I want. I can assume this Hayashi in gross extension of the gross Zagier, I can assume BSD. As long as I get a point, that's good at the end of the day. Obviously, you'd have to worry about something like this if you were trying to actually, say, prove the BSD conjecture via the use of finger points.
And, I mean, to compute the L, you have to assume that Shaw has a given order or something.
Yeah, so...
So you just assume it's one.
Yeah, in practice you can. One's the worst case.
Right.
Okay, so now I'll state actually what the algorithm is, make a few more comments, perhaps indicate how descent can be thrown into the package. Okay. So I'll call this an algorithm, although, as I say, it depends upon conjectures, depends upon all kinds of things. So, you're given E, you choose your D, so you choose your D in the way that I set up here, you can compute the L value of the twist, and we choose the D, and we calculate these representatives, which I'll call tau. So these representatives are these quadratic forms, where now I'm just writing tau, because tau is a point in the upper half plane. So these are upper half plane points. As I say, using the idea of Delaunay, this is very efficient. You can easily, in a second, run through 50 or 100 Ds and figure out which set of representatives is going to be the fastest to do the computation. So then you compute this part of the map by psi. So you compute psi tau to high precision. So I should say how long this step takes. This takes, needs n times the precision in digits terms of the L series. So it's linear in the conductor, and if you need 100 digits here, it's, you know, it's some proportional constant here. It's, if you need 100 digits, it'll be like 100n. If you need 1,000 digits, it'll be like 1,000n. Obviously, it's not digits, it's probably base E, but we'll ignore that. Okay, so then you compute this thing to high precision. It's something here. You add the points up here. You don't want to be adding the points here. Then you apply the exponential map, and you get some coordinates on E, and you want to recognize these as rational numbers. So recognize, call this, you recognize the exponential U as a rational form. Okay, so here is where the idea of Elkies with this lattice reduction can come in again. Yesterday we heard a PI version of it, but here you're doing a complex approximation, will turn out actually to get a real number after modding out by the lattice. But so let's suppose that the numerator and denominator have each digits. Then there's various ways that you can try to recognize this thing that you get as a rational point. So this will just be an x-coordinate and a y-coordinate, both as real numbers. Okay, so how do you recognize them as rational points? The way that the most naive, the way that most people when they're just describing the method will say, is you just look at only the x-coordinate and you use continued fractions. Well, it's a real number. You can recognize it as a rational using continued fractions. No problem. This takes 2h precision. So the precision needed column. So if you only, so if you want to recognize a point whose numerator and denominator of 100 digits, you have to do all the intermediate steps to 200 digits, which is overkill. So a second method, which Elkies suggested to me, was use both the x and y coordinates
and use the curve. Use the x coordinate, the y coordinate, curve, and three-dimensional lattice reduction. Then just as yesterday, where we had the p-adding method, here we do it over the real numbers, though, and we get some sort of decrement. Here, turns out that it's 3h over 2. This is because this is how big the y-coordinate is going to be. So this is the numerator and denominator of the x-coordinate. Obviously, the numerator and denominator of the y-coordinate would be 3 halves as big. So you can continue this. You can embed E in P3, use four-dimensional lattice reduction, and get 4h over 3. That's the last one I'll write down. That'll be the most useful one to compare it when you add 4 descent. But there's a different method due to Cremona and Silverman that I'll describe very briefly. Uses heights. It does better than any of these. Obviously, you keep on embedding into higher and higher dimensionals. Projective space, and get smaller and some things closer and closer to 1 here. Cremona and Silverman get to H, and it does it in a practical way. There's yet another impractical improvement of Elkies, though some variants of it might be practical. And this is little o of H. And this uses some sort of embedding, Verness embedding, and some sort of transcendental result. Essentially, the points that you have some sort of height infinity function, and you know that it's transcendental. That's not worth mentioning. Okay, so what's this Cremona-Silverman method? It's the one that I use in practice in the MAGNA implementation of this. So here the idea is that you know the height of the point because you computed L prime, as I say, where we can assume whatever conjectures we want, so we can assume the SD or whatever. So here you have the height of your generator is equal to the height infinity plus the local heights plus the log of the denominator of the x-coordinate. And here you only have to worry about the prime to divide this. So the idea is that this is known. Again, you're assuming the Monte constant or whatever is 1, so you don't have to worry. This is known to good precision from the real approximation to G. Here, the local heights, there's only many possibilities of these. Finite might be large if the large power of the prime divides the discriminant, but in any case, there's only finitely many possibilities for these local height functions. They're all something times log p, where the something is a rational number. And so you can solve for this. And in fact, it's easier to solve for this because the denominator of the x-coordinate is a square. That actually helps you a little bit. Then once you know the denominator and once you have a real approximation, you can get the numerator. So through this division of up by heights, so you get the denominator and you use the real approximation to get the numerator. So this is superficially the most like the first idea, that you only use the x-coordinate. Elkies thinks that you can perhaps combine this with descent also, but as I say, as far as I can tell, I've not gotten anything out of him that is practical at this point. He says you should be able to reduce it by a little bit, but this little o of h thing I don't think is going to work out. Okay. Do I have 2 minutes? Okay.
You have 3 minutes.
So combining this with descent is... So I guess I had actually one of these funky diagrams before, but
This was my idea of a diagram. So we have an elliptic curve, and we have a cover of it, D. And, you know, we have a real approximation to G. And so we can pull it back. And we need less precision to identify it as a rational point. And we can make obvious improvements, like we only look at the real pre-images on the cover. We don't have to look at all the pre-images. So
you have to do this for all the covers. I mean, all the ELS covers.
Yeah, so you don't know which one it is, it's going to be. So in the magnet implementation, I kind of tacitly assume that you only have one. Yeah,
only have one.
So I assume that there is no two char or whatever. So yeah,
for two covers.
Yeah, so there is that slight detail. So then you again use real number lattice reduction, and you get width. Descent. So over there, the best we had was H. So I should say that Cremona and Samir will not admit that he had anything to do with it, but Cremona claims that he did. They worked out some examples in the 90s combining this with 2 descent. And here are the amount of precision if you write the cover as a quadric intersection rather than as a quartic is H over 3. And with 4 descent, H over 12. So what does a 12 times less precision mean? It means that you have to compute 12 times less terms in the L series, and the numbers that you use are 12 times smaller. So it's really a factor of 12 squared or maybe even 12 cubed, depending upon how your what your mod over arithmetic is. So this really is a big speed up. So the biggest example that's been done, here's one. This appears in the Hagner's link that I gave before. There's an elliptic curve of conductor 66 million. This number is not prime, if I remember correctly. You compute what the height of the Hagner point should be. It's 12,557.
Yes,
exactly. Maybe I copied. Yeah. Well, I said it wasn't prime, didn't I? Maybe you objected to this. Yeah. So then you do a 4 descent on this. You find out you need 460 digits of precision, 600 million terms of the L series, and on a fast computer, this takes 5 or 6 hours maybe, and you get your point, which you have to put in really, really small type to exhibit.
Yeah, it wasn't fit on here.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all.
Questions?
Yeah. So I told you about this already, and it made me interesting to see whether it really helps here. So one other possibility one may have is to, I mean, not first take the trace of the point and then try to recognize it in the end, but try to recognize this bunch of conjugates of points you get when you apply your map directly to all these CM points. And I mean, then because you don't take the trace of a large number or the sum of a large number of points, the height should be much smaller. And then once you have this, you can represent this divisor essentially. I mean, it will be divisor defined over Q exactly, and then do some kind of reduction algorithm on this divisor in exact arithmetic. So it would be interesting to see if this really gives you some savings in the position you need.
So would that allow you to construct the Hilbert class field? This is something that Peter Stevenhagen asks me a lot. Yeah. Can you construct the Hilbert class field?
Well, I mean, you have to find the characteristic, well, the minimal polynomial of the exponent, but I mean, you have all the conjugates.
Yeah.
And I think Donzaki told me that he has a way of scaling things in such a way that you actually get algebraic integers I mean, you get projective coordinates, but they're algebraic integers, and so it's, you can, I mean, you don't have to worry about denominators in order to recognize things.
Mm, nice. I have a question. So you have all these improvements. Where exactly, or what are the places in which you, why can't you do the 7.8.2.3.1 that you did via four descent? Like, where, what part of this is too hard? Is it?
This N.
Okay.
That's about 18 billion or something. I can't remember what it is. It's something,
I guess,
like
it's
that.
Something like,
yeah,
12 cubed times 7823 squared or so.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's large.
So you'd have to compute billions of terms of,
yeah,
the asterisk, basically.
So
it's just too
big. I've done things where I've computed, you know, 5 billion terms of an L series, but
this one's just a little too big.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no point in doing it because I already saw them.
I'm just curious what the limit of this method is.
Yeah. So usually N is the limitation here.
Okay.
My experience is that if the precision is the problem, you just do a descent, and that reduces the precision by enough.
But Mark, I mean, you, this is what you need theoretically to make sure you've converged enough.
Yes.
But
I find
in practice, it's really log of n squared or something by the Riemann hypothesis.
That would be at the edge of the critical strip, perhaps. Here you're at the center of the critical strip, and you probably are going to need this many terms to do it, I think. Maybe I'm just bad.
I mean, if your program is up and running, you should try it.
No, I distinctly know that if you cut this off at, say, n times the precision over 2, you might be able to recognize, say, the denominator as a square, but you're not going to get the numerator from that. So, my general impression is that these analytic number theory things with the Riemann hypothesis, in order to get it to the amount of high precision that you need, you really aren't helped by assuming this thing extra.
I guess the terms you are summing, are approximately of the size that's indicated by this. So you kind of expect the R to be smaller than say the last term in your sum.
Yeah. So the thing that you're summing is, you know, maybe a cluster. I'm not thinking. Where z is in the upper half plane, z is approximately, you know, square root of d over 2a and the imaginary part of c. So you're going to need to take about n terms here, and these terms are all. You can quote GR8 and say, well, you get lots of cancellation here, but you know this is going to zero fairly slowly. So.
So I have a question about the rank 2 curves. Why did you take rank 2?
We did rank 3 also. There's 423,000 rank 3 curves. Cremona decided that he didn't want to bother me with so many of them, so he changed the search limit, and he got, I think, all but one of them or something. And I think 380 of them had some rank 5, and I just did the 4 descent on that and finished them all up. He also did ranks 4, 5, and 6. The problem with rank 1 is that, well, we're going to have a lot more points that we can't find unless we start using Heitinger points. You know, since our conductors are up to 10 to the 10th, it's unclear. But so I should say that we did all this rank 2 things. Okay, so you have all these rank 2 lattices. So what's the lattice distribution of these rank 2 elliptic curves? Well, you know, so what's a rank 2 lattice look like? Well, you know, you have something that's, say, of rank 1, and then you have something that's in a fundamental domain. So something that's in a fundamental domain, or maybe half of it, because you know you can either have this or its reflection, and you would expect to get something that corresponds to the Haar measure here. We just don't get that at all. So we have these 2 million rank 2 lattices, and we try to do some sort of lattice distribution thing. And what our expectation was, you know, getting something that corresponded to this fundamental domain for SL2Z, didn't occur. We got the skewed lattices. We had more things that were closer to the edge than should have been, and they didn't go as high up as they should have gone. We have no theoretical explanation of that.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. So in about 7 minutes, Tom will give the last half hour talk of the day.